Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Gravet, one of the hosts of the show, and I'm here today with Matt Spaeth and Susan Wright. Welcome, guys and gals.
Hi.
Hey, Carol. Good to be here.
Yeah, we have an exciting show today. Before we introduce our first guests, I wanted to share a few things with you for our listeners out there. It was a really exciting day today. We have two pages on Facebook. One of them is the Food Integrity Movement, which actually Matt started about 6 months ago, and we all jumped on the bandwagon. And today we reach 1,000 members. And I thought it was interesting because my daughter, Sarah Gagan, was the 1,000th member, which was pretty exciting. And we also have a website, or not a website, but a page on there called Food Integrity Now. And if you go to either one of these sites, you can get updates on all the shows that we're doing. We have some really exciting guests coming up in the month of September. And you can just find out more about that on either one of their sites. Also, we have a website called foodintegritynow.org. And this website is where we actually archive all of the shows. And if you go to that website and you subscribe to it, then you will always get an email once the shows are archived. Isn't that correct, Matt?
Yeah, that's right. You just click on subscribe, enter your email address, and you'll stay updated on everything we post.
Yeah, that's great. So, and there's also a new page on there where we have upcoming shows and with a calendar of who our guests are going to be. So there's all kinds of information there. And we have a guest today. His name is David Armstrong. He's a licensed acupuncturist, herbalist, massage therapist, and Tai Chi practitioner. David, welcome.
Thank you, Carol. I really appreciate being on the show today.
Yeah,
it's really enjoyable for me.
We're excited to have you, David. David is going to be sharing with us today a little bit about Chinese medicine and foods and how this affects our not only our physical body, but our emotional, spiritual, and mental bodies. So, again, David, welcome to the show. I think Susan's going to start off with a question for you.
Yeah, well,
all right.
I, just in my studies of nutrition, studying the Chinese way of looking at nutrition, I found to be one of the most helpful sources in trying to understand diet. And it's a little bit different. It's different than the Western approach. So it takes some getting used to and takes some time to understand it. Can you explain the basic approach that Chinese medicine has in understanding or approaching nutrition?
Sure, Susan. One thing you just brought up as being difficult to adjust to, it's very different than our culture that we've grown up in the Western world, with food being provided at the grocery store, so to speak, and people telling us what to eat instead of us really looking inside and seeing what's good for us. But in the Chinese medical model, we had things set up to where each person has their own kind of individual processing that they do, and different people have different organ weaknesses and organ strengths. And what we do in the Chinese medical model is set things up in respect of that as an individual. Some people have stronger digestive tracts and more susceptible livers. Some people have weaker lungs and stronger livers. So we work with dietary things as well as herbal medicine to help respect those kinds of things as an individual. And it's sort of like redoing our culture, so to speak, within ourselves to consider who we are, what our strengths are, what our imbalances are, and how to adjust our diet accordingly.
How important is food in Chinese medicine for healing?
It's one of the main pillars in the foundation of health. It's extremely important. What we put into our systems is extremely valuable and extremely challenging, depending on what it is and who the person is.
Right. And how do you, if you're trying to help someone to overcome some of these constitutional imbalances that you're talking about, or the organ imbalances, how do you go about assessing and advising how someone would change their diet?
A lot of it's done based on symptoms that people present with, how they are too cold in their body or how their body's running too hot, whether they have headaches from too much energy or headaches from not enough energy. The deficiency and excess, hot and cold, are two of the main principles of the medicine. And each food, herb, substance that we eat, drink, whatever, has a temperature property unto itself, just as things like cinnamon and cloves and garlic are all warming and will warm your body up. Things like watermelon and cucumbers are cooling. So in respect of the person's hot or coldness in their body and where they are in their stresses of life and also the seasons, we respect the seasons too, since we live on the earth and are subject to them and work with them. That's how we make dietary recommendations.
Yeah, I thought that the temperature of the foods was really interesting, because a lot of people take garlic, and if you have a really inflammatory condition, like a really acute lung infection that's producing a lot of heat, that can actually make it worse, right? Because garlic is very hot, considered very hot. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. It would be similar to someone who had like an infection on their skin or something, and they put a hot pack on a hot infection. It would make it too much hotter and make it worse. Mm-hmm. Same thing goes on internally with what you're talking about with inflammations, heat reactions. We don't want to add hot foods to that.
So is that true, David, with all inflammatory conditions, like inflammation in the joints and things like that? Or is that too general?
That's a little bit too general. As I said earlier, in Chinese medicine, we consider each person an individual and how they process things. And different people can have different kinds of inflammation in different tissues in their body. And if it is, for instance, in the joints, then it would be in a place where they may be able to get by with some kind of warming foods that are gentle, but still, if they have a heat condition going on, they'll need to be careful and not overdo it. It's all about balance.
How would someone know if they had a heat condition?
Usually by feeling. They'll usually feel some kind of heat in their body somewhere at some time of day.
I have a lot of friends who often have cold hands, cold feet. Would that be a symptom of lack of heat in the body? Or is that circulation?
It's going to, again, depend on the individual, but I say that because some people can have hot sensations in their abdominal region and have cold hands and feet. And sometimes that's just a matter of getting, as you mentioned, circulation from within their core of their body out to their hands and feet.
Mm-hmm.
But there may be some people that are having cold hands and feet and their whole body's cold. So they would be the ones that would benefit more from a general warming kind of diet. Somebody who had the cold hands and feet and the heat in the internal regions of their body, in the abdominal region, for instance, then they would need some kinds of foods that are circulating in nature that help energy and blood flow and circulate to the hands and feet. One herb that comes to mind for that is the twig of the cinnamon plant. In Chinese medicine, there's different parts of the plant that are used for different things. The cinnamon bark, like you usually get in a grocery store, ground up cinnamon bark, that's going to warm up the inside of your body. But the cinnamon twig will help warm a little bit, but mainly help circulate blood and energy to the hands and feet.
That's one of the things that I really love about Chinese medicine, is that it's so specific. It really considers the individual and the different combinations of things that can be going on in that one individual. And it took me a long time to understand why in Chinese medicine they hardly ever use just one herb for something. It's usually a combination that is very precisely formulated. And that's what you're talking about, you know, you can have heat conditions and cold conditions in the same person, but in a certain combination. And is that something that you come across quite a bit?
Yeah, very often, actually. Most people have more than one kind of imbalance happening. With the medicine that I practice, it's called traditional Chinese medicine, and basically what we do is filter pretty much everything down into an organ category for a primary organ imbalance. But most people have imbalances in two or three different organs, so those all need to be respected based on how far out of balance they are and how hot they are, how cold they are, and work with herbs to respect those different factors.
Mm-hmm. This is all just really fascinating. We are going to take a break, and you are listening to Food Integrity Now, and we have David Armstrong, who's talking about Chinese medicine and foods, and we're going to learn a lot more. And now we'll take a break and pay attention to our incredible sponsors. We've handpicked these sponsors, and we just think they're wonderful, and we will be right back. I'm Carol Gravet, and I'm one of the hosts of Food Integrity Now and a certified life coach. And I'd love to share an amazing adventure with you. Have you ever dreamed of swimming with the wild dolphins? I'm not talking about the ones in captivity at Dolphin Quest. I'm talking about swimming with them in the wild. I invite you to join me for a trip of a lifetime to swim with the dolphins. This all-inclusive trip is really a trip of a lifetime. To find out more, go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or email Carol at carol@coachwithcarol.com.
Are you experiencing depression, anxiety, anger, or low self-esteem? Do you find yourself sabotaging what you really want to achieve? Jeannie Smith at Open Heart Healing can help you work through these issues to allow joy and quality back into your life. Jeannie has over 10 years of experience as a Gestalt therapist and Tai Chi practitioner, and her office is here in Castle Rock on South Perry Street. Jeannie works with adults, couples, and adolescents. Call for a free consultation at 303-660-6373. Again, that's 303-660-6373.
Singing in the dead of night, take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arrive.
Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. We're here today with David Armstrong, who is a licensed acupuncturist, Tai Chi practitioner, massage therapist, herbalist. Anything else that you do, David, that I missed?
I do cranial sacral, but that's sort of under the realm of massage.
Okay, great. And David has been sharing with us a little bit about Chinese medicine and different temperatures in the body, and I think this is really interesting. I think Susan has another question for you.
All right.
One of the first ways that I started understanding about Chinese medicine in relation to food was through color. That you can, if you understand the organs and their associated color, you can kind of pretty much tell which food is good for which organ. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, some of it, and I want to expand on that also, but each organ has a flavor that goes with it, and that can sort of guide people into the colors also, and also what element, so to speak, the organ's associated with. Like the Chinese spleen is paired with the stomach. The organs are paired, like liver, gallbladder, kidney, bladder, heart, small intestine, but back to the spleen and the stomach. the flavor that goes with that is sweet, and the element that goes with it is earth, like soil, and so it's going to have a little bit of a darker, earthier kind of color to it. Along the lines of the other organs, the liver organ has to do with the flavor of sour, and it goes more into the color of green.
Mm-hmm.
So like green leafy vegetables are really good for our liver. And each organ also has a emotion and season that it goes with too. Currently we're in the season of summer, which correlates with the organ of the heart, and the emotion that goes with the heart is joy. The flavor that goes with it is bitter, believe it or not. Bitter is really good for assisting with the circulation of the heat that the heart generates, because the heart's always pumping, actively moving blood and generating a lot of heat in the chest. And the bitter is good for helping that circulate.
So does that mean that it's good to eat bitter flavors in the summertime?
Yeah, to a certain extent, anything can be overdone, but yeah, to respect the heat generator, the heart that is, and keeping it circulating well, it's a good idea to have that.
So for someone with heart issues, that would be particularly useful?
It can be, and I say can be because back to the individuality of the medicine, some people's heart condition may be from too much bitter, meaning there may be so much energy going on that it's not circulating well and can be stagnant and can be in an excess condition. So you wouldn't want to add more bitter in there from the standpoint of agitating the heart more. There may be so much energy built up that it needs to circulate out and not be supported, or what Chinese medicine calls tonified.
David, what is an example of, or what are some examples of bitter foods?
It's really challenging to find a whole lot of those because our culture is so oriented towards salt and sweet. There's a green leafy vegetable called, I think it's pronounced escarole. It looks like lettuce, small lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
It's got kind of a bitter flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really kind of at a loss for being able to come up with a whole lot of them.
I think that it might please some people to know that coffee is bitter, but I don't think that's necessarily a really overall balancing bitter. And chocolate is also, I like that one. That
yeah, dark chocolate.
So have your dark chocolate in the summer?
Or
small
all the time.
Amounts, yeah.
So what would be an example of some sour?
Things like lemon, some of the greener leafy vegetables have a little bit of a sour quality to them. Apple cider vinegar a little bit, and they're usually in the greener leafy vegetable kind of things, I think.
Rhubarb or
kale?
Yeah, and depending on how ripe it is, there's some sourness, I think, to spinach a little bit.
Tamarind is a good one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Tamarind.
David, I'm curious, where does coffee stand in Chinese medicine? And, you know, a lot of people drink so much coffee today. I drink a lot of tea. Sometimes I drink too much caffeine from tea. What is the effect on the body from that?
Well, the constituents of coffee are many, meaning things like caffeine, and I think there's some things in there called catecholamines. There is a lot of acidity to it, and there is a bitter flavor to it. Part of the reason I think people have so much difficulty with it is because they do it in excess, but also because instead of enjoying it for the flavor that it is, they'll dump cream and sugar and everything in there to try to keep it from being bitter. And those additives, the cream and sugar, will make it usually even more acidic. So as far as the exact correlation between what Chinese medicine would say about coffee and how to correlate that, it's kind of challenging because I don't think it came around into China till after the medicine was already going pretty strong. It's almost like a import to the country, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that it correlates exactly, but if you, you know, look at the true flavor of it, then it's going to be in the realm of the heart with the bitter, and then also the fact that it's so stimulative, it's got so much caffeine in it that it's an energy giver much more than a substance provider. So it's going to have a burning effect of yin. Chinese medicine has a yin and yang aspect. The yin is substance. Coffee is a very yang kind of substance because it has a whole lot of energy to it, but not enough substance to back that up, so to speak. Mm-hmm. That's another difficulty we have in our culture is people use coffee to keep them going, so they burn up more than they put in, which is what they're already doing in most cases because they're using their bodies a lot more than they're rejuvenating.
So, can you tell us a little bit about the yin and yang relationship, especially for someone that doesn't have any knowledge of that subject?
Sure, and the simple basics of it, they are two opposites or extremes of each other. Yang is primarily energy-oriented. It's very active. It's like has a light, or like daylight would be yang and night would be yin. And the yang primarily correlates with energy. It's things that move and circulate. The yin aspect is more of a substance. It's almost like you could consider a cup of coffee yang and a piece of animal protein like chicken or fish or beef as yin, because it's very substance oriented. And each thing can be broken down into yin and yang aspects within itself continuously. But the basics of it is yang is energy and yin is substance.
Okay. And so each one of us has a combination of yin and yang in our body, according to Chinese medicine. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
And, is there a way that you can tell that someone can be able to feel if they have that balance correctly, or people that in their family members, what are some of the symptoms of balance and imbalance?
Well, as I said, yang, energy, yin, substance. Yang, energy, also has to do with heat or movement of energy. So if somebody has a very thin body, so to speak, and a lot of heat going on, then it's likely they have more yang than they do yin. And the idea behind health is to balance both of those. Yin is also cold or cooling and more watery. Yang is also warming and hotter and more congealed. So the yang can actually burn up the yin. If somebody's really thirsty all the time, dry throat, dry mouth, then they have some kind of yin deficiency going on. Usually has to do with the lungs having dried up, like they need moisture in their lungs. So there's lack of moisture, so there's yin deficiency.
Oh, wow.
That's interesting, because I never really understood. I know that it's important, or this is my understanding, that you have a balance of yin and yang. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. But as I said earlier, it can be further divided down into each part. It's like there's a yang and yin aspect to the liver. The substance of the liver, its fleshiness, its tissue is yin. But the actions and activities and physiological processes that it does are yang. Mm-hmm. So if you have a lot of activity and energy running through your liver, but you've burnt up a lot of your nutrients and it's deficient there, then you would have a yin deficient liver.
Mm. So
most nutrients that are solid are more yang than yin. Like I said earlier, like animal flesh, even the, you know, fleshy parts of vegetables, things like that, those are yin.
Okay.
It's like if you take an orange, for example, all that water in it and all those fibers and everything, they're yin. But that sugar in the orange has a real strong energy quality to it, so it would be considered yang.
Mm-hmm. All right, David, we're going to take a break in about a minute, okay. But Before we do that, why don't you go ahead and give us your contact info?
Okay. It's David Armstrong. I have an office in Woodland Park. My phone number is area code 719-684-3909. You can look at my website, which is being built. It's listeningheartmedicines.com. My email is david@listeningheartmedicines.com. I also work at a clinic by Swedish Hospital in Inglewood, which is a suburb on the south end of Denver. It's called Progressive Health Center. They have a real nice website called progressivehealthcenter.org, which you're welcome to look at also.
Okay.
Great. When we come back, let's talk about stress and agitation and how it relates to food.
Sounds great.
Come on up, stay tuned, and we'll be right back after the break.
I'm Carol Gravet, and I'm one of the hosts of Food Integrity Now and a certified life coach, and I'd love to share an amazing adventure with you. Have you ever dreamed of swimming with the wild dolphins? I'm not talking about the ones in captivity at Dolphin Quest. I'm talking about swimming with them in the wild. I invite you to join me for a trip of a lifetime to swim with the dolphins. This all-inclusive trip is really a trip of a lifetime. To find out more, go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or email Carol at carol@coachwithcarol.com.
Hi, I'm Karen Cantrell. I'm an animal whisperer. I have the ability to connect with the energy of your animals. During our session, you will gain a valuable understanding of what the animal is experiencing and why, the ways that you can assist them, and also discover the information and support your animals desire to share with you to assist you on your own healing path. For more information, visit my website, healinganimalwhisperer.com, or give me a call at 303-974-1978.
Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. We have as our guest today David Armstrong, and he's been talking to us about traditional Chinese medicine. Welcome back, David.
Great, thanks, Matt.
Let's start off this segment talking about stress in the body, how to deal with stress, and its relationship to food.
All right. One thing I want to say is kind of a funny little statement, but it's so true. And that is that the stomach has no teeth. So we need to be really aware of what we're doing when we put something in our mouth. And I mean, chew it up. Because whatever comes down the esophagus into the stomach has to deal with as it is and then get a second chance to chew it up, so to speak. So part of the reason I bring that up is because many people are going fast, and they eat fast, and they don't chew their food, so the stomach has to deal with it, and so does everything else down the digestive tract. But back to the main thing about the stress and agitation, there's a thing that we have in our body that's a mechanism that protects us really well. It's called a flight or fight syndrome. We either want to fight somebody or run away from them whenever we come up with stress. And we keep that going to a certain level as a protection mechanism that's not necessary when the stress is gone. But since we have sedentary lifestyles, we get an onslaught of stresses coming at us, react with the fight or flight syndrome, send our body into hyperadrenaline mode, and then we don't go run it off or walk it off or breathe it off. We just sit at our desk and go on about our little daily routine that's really sedentary. So that stuff builds up in our body, and we contribute to it with some of our dietary things like caffeine and things of that nature that are stimulative, and sugar, of course. But when we're stressed like that, we're carrying like a baseline level of stress, and it's in our body, and it affects our digestive tract. Most people have probably heard of someone worrying themselves into an ulcer. Well, that's an energy that's running through their stomach that causes their stomach to secrete too much acid and burn their stomach, which creates the ulcer. So it's like an unconscious thing going on, which is mainly what runs our body functions, is the unconscious mind. So if we're going to have a meal, it's good to prepare ourselves for it. Take a few minutes, relax, do some breathing, get settled, calm our environment, maybe put on some music that's calming, whatever works to help us calm down, to have a supportive environment to begin to digest our food as soon as we put it in our mouth.
That's interesting, David, because I know that there's a lot of people, when they get stressed, emotionally stressed, they want to eat. And that's mm-hmm. and that's probably just the thing that you should not do.
Usually that's the case. It depends a little bit on the person, but for the most part, if someone is stressed, emotionally upset, it's not a good idea to put some food in the works while we're still dealing with those hyper emotions. However, having said that, some people run themselves to a place where their blood sugar is so low, they need something pretty quick. So it's important to, you know, be aware of how much we are pushing ourselves so that we keep things in balance, have food regularly, and don't get to a state where we have almost an emergency from a blood sugar standpoint.
I just wanted to interject something here. For those of you who may be trying to ask David questions online, we're having technical difficulties with that right now. So if you have questions for David, please call 888-321-RADIO. That's 888-321-7234. Okay, go ahead.
So how important is our intention related to food? Like what we're intending? I mean, can you talk a little bit about that, intention and food?
Sure. That's a real good point. It, to me, connects with the emotions. It's like, what is motivating us to have a food? What do we intend to do with it? I've worked with my own relationship with food and found that I've done what's called emotional eating. It's very important that I'm honest with myself about that and really see food for what it's really for. It is to nourish me, and I can't actually nourish my emotions with it, but it's not a good idea for me to try to make food do something for my emotions instead of really coming to terms with my emotions, be clear in my intention for why I'm eating something, and have that food be real nourishing for me from a support standpoint and not just to try to make some emotion stay in the background or keep it suppressed.
I bet a lot of people never really think about that, you know, before they go to put something in their mouth, but it's like anything else. It's awareness, you know, why am I eating? What's my intention? And it feels like it's really important for all of us to pay attention to.
Yeah, it's like ask the question, what is this food for? What is this vegetable for? What's this kale for me? It's to help my liver get nourished, to help me add more nutrients and minerals to run my body better. And yes, it has a flavor to it that I can really enjoy.
You know, in this society that is just so prolific in fast foods, where people are just, you know, pulling into the drive-through window and grabbing something because everybody's in such a hurry, it seems really important to, you know, slow down and pay attention to what you're putting in your body.
And a lot in the reverse, a lot of people don't pay attention to how a food makes them feel, because as soon as you put something in your mouth, there's a chemical reaction. But you might not feel the full effects of eating a food till a few hours later, and so they separate that, or they don't put those two things together.
Right. There's a mental, emotional component to even chemical reactions going on before you get the food, too, about how you think about it, and maybe you'll smell it, things like that. So you go into this take in the food mode, so to speak, before you even take it in.
David, what about food cravings? And, you know, I know a lot of us, after we're done eating a meal, you know, maybe we want something sweet. Do you think that's just more habit, or is it chemical, or can you explain that?
I feel like it's some of both, because we do get into patterns and habits, and we're used to, in our culture, having a nice meal and a dessert, so to speak, afterwards. That's usually composed of something sweet. So that can be habitual, and it's good to break those patterns. Another underlying factor for motivation of cravings can be deficiencies of things like minerals and some of the other vitamins and nutrients that we really need. Sometimes our body actually does have what I'll call a valid craving or really strong desire for something because that's what your body needs. However, there is so much unprocessed emotions that people have. Many times underneath the craving, there's some kind of emotion that they're trying to pacify or keep hidden so that they don't need to deal with it. So it's important, back to that intention and integrity standpoint, be real clear about what's going on emotionally when you have a craving so that you can come to terms with it and not let it run your life, so to speak. Because some people can even get into such cravings that it becomes like food addictions.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to, you know, who's the one that runs the show here in regards to who we are. Are we really living our life from controlling ourselves and running our life, or are our cravings and these onslaughts of stimulants from the exterior driving our life to eat a certain thing?
That's actually where Chinese medicine was the most, or the Chinese approach was the most helpful for me, because I was a sugar addict, probably still am a sugar addict, but it was so strong, such a strong craving. And I finally figured out through studying the Chinese approach of how to eat in a more balanced way, because my body really was craving minerals. And as soon as I started supplying my body with the right balance of those foods, those cravings diminished a lot until they were.
Yeah, if we can really integrate the five flavors of the sour, bitter, salty, sweet, and pungent, and balance those in our lives, it's less likely that we'll have a strong desire for something like a sugar or even a salt.
Mm-hmm. You know, go ahead, David. I'm sorry.
I do want to interject here something that's really prolific in our culture that I think people need to be more responsible about. I call it the five S's for health. Sugar, salt, soda are the three big things in our culture that's readily available for consumption pretty much at any time that we need to be really healthy with. There are healthy kinds of sugar, healthy kinds of salt, and there are some reasonably healthy sodas, but what I'm talking about mostly is some of the commercial ones that have things like chemicals in them that are hard on your kidneys. So three of the S's are sugar, salt, and soda. The other two are stress and sleep. Stress has to do with having healthy boundaries, working in healthy ways, and doing what we can not to worry about things, have valid concerns, but not worry. And then do what we need to do, as I said earlier, about preparing to eat. It's a good idea to prepare for sleep, because sleep's a place where we rejuvenate. So those are some things that I love to share with people to help them in general health, but also it's good for your immune system too, which is very important with where we are today and some of the toxins that are going around.
You know, one of the things I think that a lot of people do is they'll watch the news or television before they go to bed, and that stimulates, you know, your brainwave into a high beta, or it can, high beta brainwave, and then they try to lay down and go to sleep, and they just haven't prepared. So, you know, that's something that people may not even think about, but that does affect the quality of your sleep. And so it's important to prepare like anything else.
Sleep's a big topic these days. David, how should someone feel when they're waking up from bed?
Well rested, rejuvenated, mentally clear, easily remember their dreams, easily receive and understand and be able to work with the messages from their dreams. In other words, kind of like know what happened last night instead of just going out and, you know, having no recollection, although sometimes that is just kind of where we're at. But basically, when you wake up in the morning, you should feel like you had a rejuvenation throughout the night.
And if they don't, where's a good place to start to look into having a better sleep?
Well, back to the medicine that I work with, the Chinese medicine, we would talk about symptoms. If somebody wakes up and they have a headache, or they just have zero energy, or their sinuses are congested, or they feel like their body weighs 50,000 pounds or something like that, we start talking about symptoms and back up through dietary things, through, you know, lifestyle and stresses for how to alleviate those symptoms that are telling us what's making them or the cause of poor sleep or poor rejuvenation. I would say, in general, a lot of people have two things going on. One is a deficiency of energy because they're not rejuvenating, and a quality called dampness, which is basically excess fluid in the system.
David, I hate to interrupt you here, but we're going to have to take a quick break to pay attention to our sponsors, and we will be right back. You are listening to Food Integrity Now on Castle Rock Radio. Stay tuned.
Had it been another day, I might have looked the other way, and I'd have never been aware. But as it is, I'll dream of her tonight. La-da-da-da-da.
Hi, folks. My name is Guy Harold, and my family has been in the surgical stainless steel cookware business for 63 years. I am a value dealer. I sell for less. The cookware is used by Gearson and Price Pottinger, people around the world. Why? Our steel is non-reactive, non-porous, and is correct for your cooking needs. The temperature gauge knob tells you when the texture of produce and minimizes plant cell breakage, saving up to 48.9% more nutritional food value. The cookware has a lifetime warranty. No aluminum, no coatings, no cast iron, no ceramic, and no glass. Nothing to break or wear out. And you can stack cook up to three tiers high, saving you energy as well as food value. Call the Cookware Guy at 760-505-7057 or visit our website at www.stainlesscookware4u.com. That's stainlesscookware4u.com.
I'm Carol Gravet, and I'm one of the hosts of Food Integrity Now and a certified life coach. And I'd love to share an amazing adventure with you. Have you ever dreamed of swimming with the wild dolphins? I'm not talking about the ones in captivity at Dolphin Quest. I'm talking about swimming with them in the wild. I invite you to join me for a trip of a lifetime to swim with the dolphins. This all-inclusive trip is really a trip of a lifetime. To find out more, go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or email Carol at carol@coachwithcarol.com.
Who knows how long I've loved you? You know I love you still.
Welcome back to Food Integrity Now, and we've been talking with David Armstrong, who is a medical or a Chinese medicine practitioner, and we left off talking about sleep and the relationship of food to sleep, and you were just starting to get into the aspect called dampness, which is an overload caused usually by an overload of food in the system. Can you continue with that?
Sure. I wanted to expound on the answer for the, you know, where to go if people do have poor sleep, and I'll get more into that in a second. But on the dampness, it usually comes from, as you stated, an overload of food in the system many times, although sometimes it can be a result of people not processing the food that they have in a harmonious way, meaning they may end up with too much fluid in their lungs because they didn't digest things well, and that's the way their body dealt with it. Dampness is basically exactly what it says it is. Something's too wet, and eventually, if it's not dealt with, it either builds up to get wetter and wetter, or it turns into what Chinese medicine calls phlegm, which is dampness that has been cooked, so to speak, and thickened and congeals, and it's harder to deal with. Most of the time, it's a result of having too many products that produce dampness in the system. One of them is dairy products. Sometimes people don't digest animal proteins very well. Sometimes it can be from excessive sugar amounts, things like that. But if people will just look at their diet and see what they're doing all the time, continuously, every day, day in and day out, the same, and add some variety and change some of that up, they'll see some changes in their body. Did you have another question, Matt?
Yeah, David, how would someone's body feel if they had dampness?
Usually heavy, and the word that comes to mind is slow, almost like they're walking through Jell-O when they walk. they don't feel up to doing much. Sometimes they feel heavy-headed or have brain fog, things like that.
Do you think a lot of the population these days has dampness?
I do, actually. I think there is a lot of it. Most people, you know, are out of balance with their diet and not drinking enough water to flush out toxins.
Good topic, water. How much water should someone drink a day?
Well, I subscribe to the understanding that the average size adult, meaning, you know, somewhere between 120 to 160, 180 pounds, needs at least 2 liters a day, 64 ounces, half a gallon.
Okay.
And that's on, you know, an average person that takes pretty good care of themselves. People that are, you know, taking in more toxins, maybe breathing polluted air, more stagnant lifestyle, they may need to drink more.
Going back to
and it's best to sip it throughout the day instead of drink 8 ounces and go for 2 hours and drink 8 more ounces.
Right, because you don't really absorb it. Going back to digestion, when someone's having indigestion or heartburns, I think that's the term for it, and then they go and take antacids. What do you think about that?
I think it's beneficial maybe once in a while. Mm-hmm. And it will ease some symptoms, but that's basically what it does, is it's a symptom alleviator and not working to get to the cause of the problem. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, people have too acidic of a condition in their body, and they need to get more in the alkaline realm so that they don't have so much acid going on in their stomach. The body does things like that for a reason. It has all kinds of reactions going on, and everyone happens for some kind of reason, and part of the way to help is to understand those reasons and make adjustments.
Mm-hmm. David,
the other thing I want to say about the sleep thing was something we haven't talked about. We've been real a lot in the physical realm today with foods and physical body, but in the sleep realm, there is a lot of mental, emotional, and spiritual aspects to sleep that people really need to look at. As Carol mentioned earlier, if you watch television, the news especially, has got a lot of that fight or flight response kind of stuff going on in it of fear. If you do that, your mind's going to be all active and not really very willing to go to sleep. Did you have another question, Matt?
Well, yeah, I did, but let's go along what you were talking about just now. For someone that isn't very familiar with quieting the mind, what would be a good way for them to take a few minutes before they went to sleep to go through that process?
Well, one of the easiest ways to settle our mind is very simple and inexpensive, and it's called deep breathing. If somebody can just, wherever they are, whenever, always remember to deep breathe. And what I recommend people do is called equalized breathing, where you inhale the same length of time as you exhale. Don't try to force anything. Just be where you are. Take as deep a breath as you can. It's easy. Count how many seconds that is inhaling and count how many seconds it is out. Sometimes when I have difficulty going to sleep or if I wake up in the middle of the night, I'll do what I call breathe myself back to sleep. I'll just start focusing on my breath, inhale, exhale, just concentrate on that, stay focused with it, don't buy into the thoughts of my mind, and go back to sleep.
And is that, are you breathing through your nose, in through your nose, out through your mouth? What do you prefer?
I don't really pay much attention to that. I think that can be another thing for the mind to attach to and make it a trying experience. Some people recommend different things around that, and I just tell people to breathe.
You know what's pretty amazing? You know, when I work with my clients, one of the best tools that I hear this over and over again that I've ever given them is usually the equalized breathing, because, you know, anybody can do it. You can even do equalized breathing when you're driving a car and you're stressed out in traffic. So, but it's very beneficial before you go to sleep at night, or if you're having trouble going to sleep. So,
another thing that's really big in the Chinese medical model is the reflex points in the ears. We use acupuncture on the ears, or I use it just about as much as I use it on the body. And it's like giving people two treatments at once, to put needles in their ears and needles in their body at the same time. But the reason why I'm bringing it up is because it's really simple, easy thing to do is to massage your own ears. It's like giving yourself a reflexology treatment. If people haven't heard of that, that's the reflex points on the feet and the hands that relate to pretty much everything in your body. But there's a similar setup and map on your ear to do a similar thing.
Are there any books out there, David, that people can read about Chinese medicine that are for the layperson?
Yeah, there's a basic one called The Web That Has No Weaver, and it's written by Ted Kapchuk. Again, it's called The Web That Has No Weaver. And then there's another book that's more what's called five-element oriented. It's called Between Heaven and Earth. And that Between Heaven and Earth book has a really good self-evaluation thing in it to help people understand what's going on with them.
Is that book by Ephraim Korngold?
Yeah, I was just trying to remember his name. Yeah,
I actually went to Ephraim Korngold, so he's pretty amazing. Like you are, David, too. And I would love to have you share your contact information again, so if people want to experience some acupuncture or Tai Chi, which is a whole other subject that we'll get into some other time on this show. And how can they contact you again, David?
It's David Armstrong. You can email me at david@listeningheartmedicines.com. And my phone number is area code 719-684-3909. And my office is in Woodland Park. I also work at a clinic in Inglewood called Progressive Health Center, and they're at progressivehealthcenter.org. How much more time do we have?
We've got about another minute, David.
Okay.
You want to give us some final parting
words? Yeah, I wanted to bring up a little bit that's about something that's sometimes popular in our culture. It's called fasting and detoxing and dieting. Mm-hmm. I think it's very valuable, but at the same time, people need to be real considerate for where they are with their stresses in life before they start doing things like that, and do a lot of studying, work with a practitioner if you prefer. Some of them aren't too expensive, and they have a lot of knowledge. There's a lot of information on the internet. Some of it's great, some of it's not so good, but just be real respectful of how stressed your life is before you do a fast or a detox or radical change in your diet.
Yeah, that's really important, because people can actually tax their nutritional reserves a lot further and make things worse, can't they, with that?
Yeah.
Depending on where they are.
You can actually start a detox and end up in bed for a couple of weeks because you weren't strong enough to do it.
Right. So,
well, David, it has just been really great having you on our show, and there's so much more to talk about that I feel like we could, we'd love to invite you back to be on the show again sometime over the next month or so to share more.
Well, I appreciate that. I would love to do that.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, all our listeners. I want to give you a little bit of information about our upcoming show next week. We will have as our guests Mendy Heaps. Mendy Heaps is a teacher in a school system near Denver who was reprimanded and went through a lot of stress because she decided she was tired of the poor nutrition that the kids were getting in the school with the processed food, so she started bringing in fresh fruits and vegetables, and it was her whole ordeal with working with the system. So it's going to be an interesting show next week, and all our shows are archived shortly thereafter on our website as well as Castle Rock's radio website, and our website is www.foodintegritynow.org. So thanks again for listening. We will be back next week, the same time.